Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments. Consistory time for Malta. The linguistic origin of all things consistory. Pius XII and his admiration for the marvels of modern science. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. Among those to be created cardinal by Pope Benedict XVI on Saturday, 18th of February, in an ordinary public consistory, is 86-year-old Augustinian Father Prosper Grech, thus becoming the first Maltese to be created cardinal in 168 years. I went round to call on him in an inquisitive mood, discovering some surprising things about him. Stay tuned. Tell me about yourself. You were born in Malta and then you came to Rome, I think, quite early as a priest. You were ordained in Rome?
Yes, I was ordained in Rome. I studied theology in Rome, both at the then international college we had and then at the Gregorian. And after that, I went to the Biblical Institute and specialized in biblical studies, actually. Went back to Malta and taught for a couple of years, and I got a British Council scholarship to Oxford, where I spent a year there researching with Professor Driver. And from there, then, I spent another year at Cambridge working with Professor Arbery, who was Professor of Persian and Arabic. He was interested in the Maltese language. And so we did some publishing together there, some translations of Maltese literature, etc. I was lucky in that regard. And I went back to Malta for another couple of years, and in 1961, I came back to Rome, and ever since I've been here.
You're an academic. And your particular expertise, I believe, is patristics. Is that correct?
Yes and no. That means when I came back to Rome, I came here to write a thesis for the Biblical Institute. But I was immediately seized upon by Monsignor van Leerde, who was then Bishop of the Vatican City. And I spent 3 years there in this golden cage as his secretary. I did study there, and I published a book while I was there. The general who called me from the Vatican was Father Trappé, and we had a dream together to found a patristic institute which would specialize in patristics, just as the Biblical Institute specialized in biblical studies. And it took us about 4 or 5 years to do that. I knew very little about patristics. But then I chose the field of the transition between the New Testament and the early fathers, which interested me immensely. And I tried to specialize in that in the meantime, but I can't qualify myself as a strict patristic scholar. I'm a biblical scholar.
How do you see this honor that Pope Benedict XVI has bestowed on you? Do you feel it's a seal of approval on your biblical studies, on your professional know-how?
Well, I spent many years with him when he was prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. I was a consultant there. That's where I got to know him, and he got to know me. I don't know whether that merits a cardinalate or no, but he trusted me enough to send me as apostolic visitator to the seminaries in India. 10, 15 years ago, I suppose. And now he's had, I don't know what to say, the goodness or the sense of humour to paint me in red.
Painted in red, you become one of the Pope's closest advisers. That's how cardinals are often described in the media. Are you already in that position you're stepping into as one of the Pope's closest advisers?
Well, mind you, there are over 100 of them, aren't there? Some 86. I have very little experience in the Roman Curia. I'll have to start from scratch again.
You described the Vatican earlier on as a golden cage. So you're going to step inside that golden cage? You're going to be locked in there once again?
Well, I was locked in there for over 3 years. We had a room just outside the Sistine Chapel, and in fact, we were in charge of the sacristy, which belonged to the Augustinian order. Sort of, you know, I was in charge of the Sistine Chapel and the treasures are in. Sort of living in there, having Swiss guard clicking their heels every time you pass. It's beautiful, of course, inside, but sometimes I just wanted to go out of the country and breathe fresh air.
You mentioned your special rapport with our current Pope, Benedict XVI, which goes back to when he was Cardinal Ratzinger as prefect of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith. Have you seen him here since he's become Pope? You actually meet sometimes?
I was appointed as a member of the Pontifical Biblical Commission, which meets Sunday after Easter, after the first week of Easter. And the Pope usually gives us an audience and even a concelebration with him. So on these occasions, and even perhaps when I used to belong to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, I met him there with other groups of people, of course. I mean, not a private audience, but sometimes he asked me how old I was, how I'm faring, what I'm doing. So it just means that he does take a personal interest.
Can you share with us some of your emotions when you heard you were going to become a cardinal and be painted red, as you said?
Well, I was much better off before. I was much happier before. And had I been left in peace, really, I would have appreciated that. Not that I'm not thankful for this thing. But anyway, let the first 2 or 3 months pass, and then perhaps when the dust settles, I can just see what I'm in for.
You mentioned that you belong to the order of the Augustine, St. Augustine. That's something you share. The love for St. Augustine is something you share with this Pope, no?
Definitely. Anyway, we live according to the rule of St. Augustine and according to the tradition, the very old tradition of Augustinians that goes back to the 13th century. And, of course, St. Augustine then and his spirituality is the main study in our Patristic Institute. We study, of course, all the fathers, but we do emphasize Augustine, and not only for academic reasons, but even for spiritual reasons.
You were ordained a priest in 1950, if I'm correct, but you joined the Order of St. Augustine before that. I believe your vocation to the priesthood surfaced during the war years, that was the Second World War, in Malta. Tell me about this passage where you go from being a gunner to God, in a sense.
The RMA, the Royal Malta Artillery, when I was 16, my 17th birthday, I remember, was on Christmas Eve and I was on guard. Malta was under siege. Everybody was conscripted at 18. But after a few months then, my vocation sort of consolidated. And the siege of Malta was at its tail end. And I went to the colonel, and he closed an eye and said, all right, but actually you can be called any moment in case of attack. But anyway, I mean, that doesn't come. So I started my novitiate immediately then at the age of 17 and now 18, almost 18. Anyway.
So Christmas Eve seems to be a hallmark. You were born on Christmas Eve, weren't you?
That's right, yes.
You've served under many popes, beginning with Pius XII. Tell me a little bit about the popes you were closest to, your strongest memories of some of them that you'd like to share.
Having served then with Van Lierde in the Vatican, one of our duties was to, it still is, to keep the sacristy. It means where the Pope's vestments are. And for every papal function, we used to go down and, dress the Pope. Anyway, you know, with all his copes or chasubles or whatever it is. There were two brothers, Augustinian brothers, and myself, who supervised in a way. And then we assisted at the altars. So we knew Pope John personally in that way. Sometimes he used to, you know, address a good word to us and give us his blessing.
That's John the 23rd.
John the 23rd. Then he died and we were inside the conclave. And I remember I was in the Vatican corridors once and Paul the VI, during the conclave, said, "Are you the conclave confessor?" And I said, "No, I'll go and call him." He said, "But can't you hear my confession?" I said, "Well, all right, come in." So we went to the San Matilde's, it's what called in those days, the chapel in the Vatican, heard his confession. And after a couple of hours, he was Pope. So that was an experience, wasn't it? We kept in touch because I was very friendly with his secretary, Monsignor Macchi. Very often we helped to decorate his apartment. Macchi was a great lover of art. So there was some sort of contact with him. And after that, then I had the experience of John Paul I. When he was cardinal, he very often came to our cottage and stayed there. And we formed a great friendship. I was full of admiration for him. He was a very, very humble man, simple man. I never saw him while he was Pope, only once in a general audience where he waved with a smile to me. I was in the first two rows. And after that, he said, "Look, my secretary has got to go back to Venice to bring back my things, why can't you substitute him?" Well, at the time, there were some people, because I taught biblical theology, some thought was that was something Protestant, and some of the very rightist papers had my name on them. So I was a bit loath to connect myself with the Pope, under these circumstances. I said, "Look, just give me a couple of days to think it over, but I'd love to." Well, in those couple of days, unfortunately, he went missing. And that was a very, very great loss to me.
Tell me about the years of the Second Vatican Council. If I'm not mistaken, that was when you were in what you described as your golden cage in the Vatican. How did those years affect you?
I used to broadcast then in Maltese from Vatican Radio, and it was gathered then by Rediffusion, Malta Rediffusion. Every week I sent a synthesis of what had happened in the council in Maltese, which interested, of course, the population of Malta.
Are there any particular memories that you'd like to share beyond this broadcasting?
Well, my strongest memories were, of course, when De Verbum was being discussed.
The Word of God.
Yes, which dealt in a special way with Scripture and Revelation. Because, as you might know, the first draft of that document was very, very, very traditionalist and had to be replaced by a second one and a third one and a fourth one. And it's finally the fifth draft that was voted in. The biblical scholars were rather nervous about the outcome of this thing, but were very satisfied then when it came out in its fifth edition.
Last year, you received a national award in Malta in 2011. The Order of Merit as Companion of Honour, which is the most prestigious rank, as it permits only free members at one time
Why did you get this award, do you think? What was the motivation?
That's what I asked myself as well. Because I never even knew about it, least of all dreamt about it. And it came really as a surprise.
Are you surprised? Got a communique from the Vatican to say you were going to become a cardinal?
My first reaction was, what for? I said, I suppose that he appreciates your work and all that stuff. All I can say is thank you very much, but I'm rather confused about it.
How do you think your life will change once the dust settles on your red hat?
Change? In what sense?
Will your life change as a cardinal?
I'm going to continue living in this college just as I did before. And my only regret is that I can't ride my scooter any longer now, although it's red.
Well, not because you're a cardinal, surely?
Well, some people consider it under the dignity of a cardinal to ride a scooter. I don't know what's the difference between that and driving a car.
And my thanks there go to Cardinal Designate Prosper Grech, an Augustinian from Malta.
Meanwhile, changing pace and tone, time to join our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, as he explains to us the linguistic origins of things consistory, including the red biretta.
As always, I'm delighted to be back again with Father Reginald Foster.
And today I'd like to concoct a story, Father. Concoct, that's a word that comes from the Latin.
Yes.
What does it mean?
Concocere is to cook together.
It's a solemn story. And it's about consistories. Consistory, that's a word of Latin origin, isn't it?
Yeah, consistorium, to sit together.
Which means...
Like an assembly of people sitting together.
It's really
a strange
word.
So then they applied this when the cardinals and the pope were together. Was a seating together, consistory, consistorium.
If you say to someone outside the Vatican, consistory, it's a bit of a technical word,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, they wouldn't understand.
That's
it.
Unless they know Latin. Well, anyway, we said it's an assembly of cardinals. Cardinal, that's the word that comes from Latin.
Cardo, meaning a hinge on your door, and so cardinalis were the hinges of anything, and so you'd say the hinges of the church are supposed to be the cardinals.
So
that's where it comes from.
So they're the ones that are summoned at the discretion of the Pope.
Yes,
in a
because
right?
They're supposed to be the important people, the hinges on which the church revolves.
Pope reads their names ahead of the consistory, right? But the consistory itself can be secret, semi-public or public. Those words are all vaguely derived from Latin, aren't they? Secret.
Well, secretum, when no one else is there and no one knows what's going on. Secret consistories practically don't exist anymore. And then you have public consistories, namely where the doors are kind of open and what's going on in the hall is more or less well-known knowledge.
But public is comes from the Latin.
Yeah, publicus, which belongs to the people.
And semi-public?
Well, semi is Greek, meaning half.
So it's a word that's Greek and Latin.
Yes,
semi-public.
Yes.
We speak of the creation of cardinals. Creation is a word that of Latin origin.
Yeah, actually, it's very Greek. That's technical, and that is, it's correct. Creare means to appoint someone. We think of creation as like, you know, Genesis or God creating the world. But in the dictionary, creare meant to appoint an official, to create someone a senator. That was the idea. And so to create cardinals is to appoint them, period. And that's very classical Latin, really, it is. As I say, far away from what we think of creation.
And when they're created, cardinals, the Pope gives them a red hat. How would you say the Pope gives them a red hat in Latin?
Well, dat eis pilium rubrum.
Rubrum meaning
red, and pilium is the little cap. Pilium rubrum is the technical term, the red hat.
And, well, he gives the red hat on the date of the consistory to all those who are not in pectore. He actually names some of the cardinals in pectore, which means...
Well, in his heart. So if he keeps one or two names hidden, it's in his mind or memory or in his heart, that's in pectore. I don't know when that started, when the terminology started, but that's what it means.
But it actually means, pectore means chest, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, certainly.
It means, I mean, obviously it's heart, but I mean...
Yeah.
The actual word, pectore,
yeah,
is...
Yeah, pectus, yes.
If he elects people in secret, in pectore, in his heart, it's because these people might suffer retaliation in whatever political situation they live in.
Well, yes or no.
So why does he elect them in pectore?
Well, he could just say he's a cardinal with the full rights of a cardinal, and his name will be published, but right not now, or something. Yes, no, it could be.
Anyway.
Not to suffer retaliation.
And heartfelt thanks there go to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite, Father Reginald Foster, who's currently teaching in the United States, but was for many years papal Latinist. Finally, I'd like to mark World Radio Day, which is an observance marked internationally on February the 13th. In an effort to celebrate this event rather belatedly, I'd like to bring you a programme dedicated to Pius XII and his admiration for the marvels of modern science. On this occasion, strictly on radio. But why don't you listen to this scrapbook in sound from our very own Vatican Radio archives? If you do, you'll hear this 20th century Pope speaking in English.
Your Catholic hour, dearly beloved of Christ, began to broadcast its weekly message of faith and fellowship just as the Vatican Radio, which carries to you our cordial anniversary greeting and the paternal blessing, was being readied here at Rome for the use of the Pope in his worldwide ministry to souls.
That was the voice of Pope Pius XII speaking in English through the microphones of Vatican Radio to another Catholic radio station right across the Atlantic Ocean. It was 1950 and he spoke to a nation which he himself had become the first pope in history ever to have visited, clearly before his election to the See of Peter. No doubt this broadcast must have brought back memories of that crossing aboard an ocean liner almost 30 years earlier, when he was still Cardinal Eugenio Pacelli, the Vatican's Secretary of State, on his way to visit the United States. A month-long stay which ended in New York, where he met informally with the nation's president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, curiously on the 6th of November, 1936, the day after the American leader's re-election to the presidency. And on his return, this autumn journey may have inspired what seem to us today words of archaic poetic license. Quote, "Our voice on the wings of that marvellous creation of human genius is wafted from the Vatican Hill across the Atlantic in answer to your desire to hear from us a word that might stimulate the ardour of your missionary zeal." Unquote. An archaic poetic license which also revealed this Roman pontiff's admiration for the marvels of modern science.
"One had but to adjust the voice and ear to the sensitive drum of a microphone and the loud speaker to enable human minds really to meet and the human hearts really to beat as one."
Celebrating over a quarter of a century of Catholic broadcasting in the United States provided Pope Pius XII with the opportunity to thank Americans for what he described as a vast treasure dispensed over the airwaves with alertness and unflinching zeal to homes, schools, and churches. But his words did not just highlight good news.
Grace and goodwill, for which family, church and state have been so sorely athirst during this fateful quarter century of wars and rumors of war, of a strife with the perverse powers of darkness and hate.
Those were, after all, as I mentioned earlier, the 1950s in the aftermath of the Second World War. And the Pope's mind was, as he stressed, bent to the task of keeping hearts always attuned to the single, eternal objective of the Prince of Peace.
Not a cold and a cowering coexistence of rival neighbours and nations, but a communion in truth, justice and the Christian love of a brothers under God.
A spirituality, Pope Pius XII pointed out, the sponsors and speakers of the Catholic Hour had been careful to separate from the political.
But for 25 fruitful years, they have rendered you the most precious of social services, in sharing with you and your children the redemptive message of the living Christ in the full majesty of its human appeal, its healing power, its terrible urgency for a world confused and afflicted before the specter of a spiritual disaster amid the unfolding marvels of the Lord's great universe of truth and goodness and beauty.
This message to celebrate 25 years of minutes and hours over the airwaves dedicated to Catholics of the United States may have been in English, but it would not have been complete had it not ended in Latin, the official language of the Catholic Church. One obviously familiar to the Pope himself, but also to American churchgoers in those pre-conciliar days.
Et benedictio Dei omnipotentis, Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos, et maniat semper.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that scrapbook in sound from our very own Vatican Radio archives. And that's all I have time for today. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, we'll be back again at this same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is, as always, www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now. You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.